our show.
Presented by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage. Got a good show lined up for you. ABC 3340 News Director, Sports Director, Jeff Spiegel will be with us at the bottom of the hour. In the next hour, we'll be joined by Mark Heim, who has a really interesting story on AL.com. But first, we just heard from James Spann, weatherman extraordinaire. We all know it's hot, 100. I guess the heat index might be close to 115, something like that today. But y'all are really lucky to have me here in the first segment. Let me tell you why. You know, Lars knows my sweet wife and Karen, and certainly Justin is aware. But last night, she bought this huge bowl of fresh-cut watermelon. And I was in there right before the show, and I saw that, broke into it, opened it up, and I had to literally force myself to put it back in the refrigerator. Is there a better hot, humid summer food than watermelon? In fact, I'll be back in a minute.
No, there isn't. Do you put salt on your watermelon?
No. If it's not good enough, if it's a really mediocre watermelon, I will. But a watermelon should be good, fresh, fruitful. So no, I don't. And I don't put it on cantaloupe or anything else. Do you?
Absolutely not. I just, I know a lot of people do. My father did. My father put salt on everything. I've told you that he put salt in his beer. Like he would put like half a shaker of salt in his beer.
I don't understand that either. Justin, jump in here. You a watermelon guy?
Oh, big time. I could take half a watermelon, a whole one even, and a spoon, and I could clear that thing out in like 30 minutes.
Yep. That's why y'all are lucky that I'm here. And maybe you're unlucky that I'm here. Maybe I should still be in the kitchen eating that watermelon. But it was absolutely delicious and so refreshing because it is absolutely so hot. What else did your father put salt on?
Oh, I think like his hamburger, his hot dog. Even after a steak has been flavored and cooked, I think he would add a little salt on that. Wow. Basically, if it was food, he was going to put salt on it.
Do you put salt on ice cream?
That I don't know. There's actually a lot of salt in ice cream. My mom used to make homemade ice cream, and I loved it. And I was always surprised at how much salt went into it. But,
It's like cake when you put eggs and salt into it and you're watching your mom cook it and you're going, how does it end up tasting like that?
Yeah. Last night I attempted to watch Swamp Kings on Netflix. And I got to tell you, it's really bad. It's just really bad. It's a promotional video for the Florida football program. I mean, really? that's the bar was set so high with The Last Dance, right? And that sort of just made us rethink how good sports documentaries can be. And I know years ago, you remember Hoop Dreams. When two guys basically followed around two young kids for, I don't know, what, 6 to 8 years in Chicago. Last name was A.G., one of them was Arthur, but I did a story on them a long time ago. But it was amazing, just the amount of time and effort that they put into Hoop Dreams. And to me, that's the gold standard. And I think The Last Dance was in that vein, right? I had no idea in The Last Dance that all this behind the scenes footage existed. And in that doc, it revealed a side, and this is the unbelievable thing, it revealed a side of Michael Jordan that we didn't know existed. We knew he was competitive.
We thought we knew him like a family member.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought we knew absolutely everything there was to know about Michael Jordan. Turns out we didn't. We did not know how demanding he was and just how competitive he was and how sometimes cruel he could be because someone wasn't living up to his expectations. And but that whole franchise and those that run of winning six championships, it was all because of Michael Jordan. I mean, and he was the one that was almost like the coach of the team. And yes, Phil was great, and you know, was a, obviously played a huge role. But it, everything is about Michael Jordan. Well, then you know, we just had the Johnny Manziel untold Netflix documentary,
which you gave an A.
No, I did not. No,
oh, I thought you really liked it.
I liked parts of it, but it was so rushed, and so many things were left out. It's just like, oh, in passing, he says he tried to commit suicide, and then that's it. There's not a deeper dive into. Wait a minute,
boy,
what caused your depression here? And also, they give about 3 minutes to his NFL career. And then
well, that's about this, all it was.
And then, you know, he admits that he's got, you know, substance abuse issues, alcohol issues. And the doc ends with him hanging out with friends, drinking beer. You know, and it's just really, it was just weird. It was weird. And it felt incomplete, a lot of holes in it. And I think the producer, I hate to say it, just didn't do a good job, right? And I mean, I've worked the one time I did a documentary, right? I co-wrote a documentary and I did a lot of interviews for a Showtime documentary on Lawrence Phillips. I worked with Ross Greenberg, who was a former head of HBO Sports, and I got to see firsthand like what a pro looks like, you know, pro's pro. And it was hard for us to jam everything we did into like 93 minutes, but Ross was able to do it. And then Armin Katayan and I wrote it together, wrote the copy and going back and forth. And Armin really taught me a lot about what it's like to write for television or write for a documentary and just how different it is than writing, you know, a magazine piece or a book. And it did really well. And I felt like we did a really good job, all of us collectively. And really one of the stars of the documentary was Nick Saban. He just jumps off the camera at you. And, remember when I interviewed him, down in Tuscaloosa on Lawrence, you know, I could tell he didn't want to be, he agreed to do it, but he didn't want to be there, Then boom. Once the camera comes on, he just came alive, you know? And I don't know if you've had that experience with different subjects, Matt, but like Nick Saban could just do that. And I think he does that pretty much all the time. But this documentary on Florida is just so bad. It needed to be fact-checked. It glosses over the off-the-field issues. And I don't think it really digs deep into Urban Meyer, doesn't dig deep into his relationship with Shelley Meyer. And just, it again, it just came off as a PR stunt. And I didn't care for it at all. And I think, and Tim Tebow said some inaccurate things, especially when it came to Alabama. You know, I think in the crying game wasn't, I think Florida was one and Alabama was two, right? In the
talking
SEC
about the movie or Tim Tebow
and Tim Tebow in the documentary,
taking a right turn. Do you ever see the movie, The Crying Game?
Oh, no. No.
Whoa, that you want to talk about a documentary. Well, here, the reason, in my opinion, Lars, that these documentaries tend to take a certain direction is because the subjects end up with editorial control. That's not a documentary. Excuse me, that's a biography, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they won't agree to do it unless they have that. And once you allow that, you lose all your journalistic integrity in most ways.
Yeah, I think it was accurate? Yes, I think it was the 2009 SEC championship game that he was talking about. I could be wrong, but he was saying, oh, Alabama, they had nothing to lose, and they played like it. Well, wait a minute. Alabama's 12-0. ranked number two in the country, and with a win, they play in the national championship game. What are you talking about, Tim Tebow? Like, I don't know. Selective memory, maybe.
But, absolutely, it is.
I wouldn't waste time watching it. I feel like I'm not going to be able to get those hours back, but...
It's like 4 30-minute segments, something like that?
Something like that.
All right, this is Lars not watch, must not watch TV.
Exactly. Go watch. Right. Watch The Last Dance again. That's an amazing documentary.
You're listening to Big Noon Sports. I want to get into this story by Mark Heim, and he will be on in an hour about tickets to the University of Alabama. I found it quite interesting. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. Blistering heat continues for the rest of the week. A sunny sky this afternoon. The high today near 100. For tonight, clear with the low at 78. And tomorrow and Friday, lots of sunshine both days. Highs will stay close to 100 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 95 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Indeed it is. Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars. Justin, how are you today, man? Hadn't really talked to you other than the very, very top of the show. Life good in your world other than just being steamy hot?
Yeah, that's about it. Steamy hot. I wish I was out playing some golf, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen today and maybe not the next couple of days.
Can it be? Obviously not. It can't be too hot for you to play golf?
That's a great question. Yes. There's only so much sunscreen I can put on for me to even be outside in heat like this. So, yeah, well, it's definitely too hot now.
I'm embarking on a suicide mission after the show. I'm taking my son Lincoln golfing. We've kind of had this on the books for a couple days, and I don't think his mom's too happy about it, but we're gonna give it a go. We're going to play the little par three where there's not a tree in sight. So, we're going to be hydrating quite a bit.
I've gone out and I've thought this is way too hot to play, but once you get out there, you kind of almost feel like, you know, you got to finish. If you get off the tee and you get through three or four, then you're going to have to at least finish nine. I've done that.
Well, you know, Matt, they say it's actually pretty good to play in the heat as well just because it keeps you loose. It makes it harder for you to tighten up.
Yep, I bet it does. But I don't know if I would even take on what Lars is doing today. However, when your son or grandchildren or something like that's involved, that's a big, big difference. Mark Heim from AL.com and WNSP down in Mobile will be joining us in about an hour, and he'll talk more extensively about this. And I don't know if you two guys have seen the article or not, but what team do you think has the most ticket pressure, the most wants, according to StubHub, Vivid Seats, SeatGeek, whatever they are these days? Highest ticket demand in the nation. Who is it? Justin, did you read this?
I did not read this.
Take a shot.
Okay. Football teams, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's Alabama. Is it LSU?
What about you, Lars? You got a shot here?
I've not seen it either. I'll go Alabama.
It is Alabama. They have a 24% lead over Michigan. I can't even imagine the Big House at 24%. These numbers don't add up in my mind, in my feeble little brain. So we'll ask Mark Heim about it next hour. But Alabama was number one. What game do you think has the most demand on Alabama's schedule? Obviously, we're talking about at home.
It's got to be Texas.
Justin, you got a guess?
Yeah, that has to be Texas. There's no way.
It is. It is Texas. Number two, I'm not going to do this all day long. I'll let y'all have one more guess. Not a guess.
LSU.
Justin, what do you think?
LSU. I'll throw my third bet, and then the next one's Tennessee.
All right. According to this, most in-demand ticket games, and I think Mark did is he took a combination of the StubHub information and Vivid Seats and SeatGeek. And Texas at Alabama was number one on the Tide schedule. Then it was Tennessee. Not surprised by that. Three surprised me. Ole Miss at Alabama. And I'm surprised at all she wasn't in the top three. But that's the way it is. By the way, Auburn, just to keep things as even as we can, Auburn had the seventh most ticket demands. So that's just, it's interesting stuff, and it just goes to show you how big-time Alabama football is. And we'll see. But I thought that LSU would have been a lot higher. So there is my offer on ticket sales, so, or demand.
Yeah, I also, there's a story that caught my eye the other day, and I meant to bring it up, and it involves, it's USA Today, and it's just one of these list stories, but I think they actually put some thought into it. It's not purely clickbait of the coaches who are squarely on the hot seat entering 2023. And so it's a list of 10, seven on last year's list. They did a pretty good job because seven of the 10 on USA Today's list either quit, were fired, or left for another job. And the three survivors from that purge from that list are Steve Sarkisian at Texas, Mike Norvell at Florida State. And both of those coaches have done a great job in turning around those programs in a very quick way. And Dino Babers at Syracuse. So I think they have a little bit of credibility, right? And they don't really put them in any order. But I'll just go over a couple of them. And number one here that caught my eye is Mel Tucker at Michigan State. Because, you know, they certainly appears that they overpaid him. They gave him about, a $77 million contract. And Michigan State is just, ever since he got that huge deal, they have really fallen off. This one kind of surprised me. Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri. I think, you know, the media loves Eli Drinkwitz because he tells the truth. He can deliver a snappy line and he's enjoyable to be around, right? But the Missouri is a decade removed. It's hard to believe it's been that long from being in back-to-back SEC title games. And you know, they've just been average, right? And I don't know if average really cuts it in the SEC. Brent Venables, we've talked a lot about him at Oklahoma, and
he got dealt from the bottom of the deck. You know?
Yes,
fans don't see that. Media doesn't see that necessarily, but we talked about it yesterday with Lincoln Riley. What a mess he left that program. How many did he take with him from Norman? 30?
Yeah.
I
don't know. I think somewhere in like 10 or so, but it was like 10 of the
best
players.
They're all starters.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, Venerables, he's known as a defensive coach, right? And he was a longtime defensive coordinator at Clemson. He had plenty of job opportunities, but he didn't want to leave Dabo and the staff there, didn't want to move his family. But then when the Oklahoma job was offered, it was just sort of too good to pass up. But ever since he's been there, you know, the offense has not been the same, right, that it was under Lincoln Riley. But also the defense has been a huge issue. Last year, Texas just absolutely destroyed the Sooners. And in the Red River rivalry, I know you're not supposed to call it that anymore, but if you get beat by your opponent by a lot. It's the equivalent of losing by a huge margin in the Iron Bowl. Like you're gone. I mean, I think that's a big reason why Gene Chizik was fired 2 years after winning the national championship. I think Auburn lost 49-0 in Tuscaloosa, and he was fired before it was wheels down in Auburn. But last year, the Oklahoma defense gave up, this is amazing, 225 plays of 10-plus yards, and they gave up a total of 461 yards a game, which ranked 122nd in the NCAA. And so if you're a defensive-minded coach, you can't last long. Mike Bloomgreen, they mentioned at Rice. I don't really have any comment on that. I'm sure you're really up on what's happening at Rice.
Big Owls guy right here. If you need to know anything about the Owls, you come to Matt.
He and Dino Babers is on here again from Syracuse. He's the only repeat performer on the list. And they lost 6 of their last 7 last season. Butch Jones at Arkansas State. Surprisingly, he's really struggled there. 5-19 over the last 2 seasons, and if they don't produce more wins, Butch Jones will be gone and maybe come back to Alabama. Wasn't he an analyst at Alabama? I think he was.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, and your buddy Neil Brown. I think you know Brown pretty well, right?
Was at Troy, now at West Virginia.
Yeah, he's at West Virginia. They've had 2 straight losing seasons, and if he doesn't turn it around this year, I think Neil Brown would probably be gone. Then they have Danny Gonzalez at New Mexico. Had 9 consecutive losses to end last season. Tom Allen at Indiana. Yeah, you know, that not a team that I follow real closely, but last 2 years they've been 2-10 and 4-8. But then the guy at the top of the list. Let me ask you both of you. Okay. Who do you think it will be?
Is it too soon for Billy Napier?
No, he's not. They don't list him.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's got going into his 2nd year.
In the SEC. He once coached at Samford.
Well, it seems like this should be a slam dunk for me, that I am just absolutely with it.
Jimbo.
Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
He's got a $49 million buyout. I think that's one reason why he doesn't immediately come to mind.
I think the buyout
on the football field. Yeah, he would be number 1.
I think the buyout's like closer to $80 million.
Oh, is it?
But you know, will they tolerate another 5-7 season from him?
No. If he goes 5-7 again this year, I will tell you he's gone. You think?
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I agree.
Hey, when we get back, we're going to talk to Jeff Spiegel, but I really have to ask you about why we can't say Red River Rivalry, other than it's difficult to say. All right, anyway, you're listening to Big Noon Sports on a very steamy Wednesday, halfway through the week. Glad you're with us. Stay tuned.
Down to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. And you just heard Lars talking about Laura Lee. Laura Lee Thompson sponsors our Alabama interviews. We appreciate her very much. Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. Is it just totally cruel? Jeff Spiegel, just jump in the conversation here, because breaking news, and I don't know if we're going to be able to reel Lars in back from the ledge.
Yeah.
Lars, do you want to break the story that broke your heart?
I've been waiting 40 years for this day. Literally 40 years for this day. Ken Anderson should have been selected into the Hall of Fame. The seniors committee, they met and they voted three players into the Hall of Fame, and it was they're picking from 12, and of the 12, only two made the final cut to 12 last year, and that was Randy Gradishar and Ken Anderson. And just by how things have gone in the last sort of decade, maybe 5-6 years, if you make the cut to 12 a second year, you get in like 100% of the time. Well, Randy Gradishar got in, but guess what? Ken Anderson, my idol, did not get in. I can't believe it. Randy Gradishar, Steve McMichael, defensive tackle, and wide receiver Art Powell are going to get in. And for those who don't know about Ken Anderson, again, he's my idol. And he, he's one of the greatest regular season quarterbacks to ever play. He led the league in 74 in five different statistical categories. He was a MVP. In 1982, he shattered the league record for completion percentage, completing 70.6. And according to a study by Pro Football Reference, the six greatest seasons of Ken Anderson's career are better than the six greatest seasons of every other quarterback in NFL history.
Wow.
He's the only quarterback with three of the top 25 seasons in NFL history. This is another study, but his average season throughout his career the standard deviation was better than every other player in NFL history other than Steve Young and Joe Montana. I mean, his credentials are just all there. And when he retired, his passer rating of 81.5 trailed just four quarterbacks in the 60-year history of the NFL. And when adjusted to the league average, only eight of the 25 quarterbacks currently in the Hall of Fame have posted a better passer rating than Ken Anderson. I could go on and on and on.
The thing is, I
don't understand it. I mean, I get it. He didn't win a Super Bowl. If they beat the San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 16 in 1981, which I was so excited to watch that my dad actually gave me a sedative. Now, what that sedative was, I have no idea. But I was 10 years old. I was 10 years old. He gave me a drug.
One now.
God, I wish my dad was alive and he could give me whatever he gave me back in 81. I'm pretty fired up.
Jeff, ABC 33.
Yes, I apologize. Jeff. I literally just found this out.
No, listen. As you were speaking, I looked on Twitter and Twitter's blowing up. I mean, people are really upset.
Well, count me in.
All right, Spiggs. He came along when you were a pretty little kid, I think. All right? You remember him, I'm sure.
Oh,
great trivia question. Where did he play college football?
Well, I'm sorry. I was looking on the Wikipedia page, I kind of know the. Is it Augustana College?
Yeah. I think is it still D3, yep. Lars?
And his offensive coordinator at Cincinnati was Bill Walsh. And it was Bill Walsh and Ken Anderson that together created the West Coast offense, which is used by everybody today. Ken Anderson was the original West Coast offense quarterback.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. So who did, of the old timers, and you may have said this just a minute ago, but who did get in? Did you say Gradishar?
Gradishar got in, and I thought it was going to be Gradishar and Ken Anderson, frankly. Defensive tackle Steve McMichael and wide receiver Art Powell. I couldn't tell you anything about Art Powell.
I think he played for the Skins, didn't he?
I'm not positive.
Nah, that's Art Monk.
I don't know. It was an arc.
He started his career in Canada before joining the Eagles in 59 for one season. Oh, okay. And then joined the New York Titans and had 69 catches for 1,100 yards. And then played two more years and a couple more thousand yards. And then he went to the Raiders. And he had a league high 73 catches for 1,300 yards.
I guess he was probably
blah 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 blah. I mean, it's not even close.
You know, the sound of Lars' voice when he's describing Art's stats just the, you know, belie how disappointed he is that Ken didn't get in.
You should have heard him going into the break. It might have been 100 degrees outside, but Lars was just cool. Confident.
Oh,
rare to go on Wednesday. We come back from the break. Man, he's reading an obituary.
Well, literally, I've been waiting 40 years. I was telling a friend of mine this yesterday. I think I said it on air. I've been waiting 40 years for this day. 40 years. And now I was planning on taking Lincoln, my son, up to Canton for the inauguration ceremony in August and all this. And now I fear that his time has passed, that he may never get in.
Speaks, when you were growing up, you were running around in your backyard pretending you were a quarterback in the NFL. Who was it? Or who were they?
Joe Namath.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's see. NFL guys, I mean, probably a little bit of Kent Stabler, you know, although I was a righty and he was the lefty. But, you know, in our backyard games, I mean, it was all about imitating the college guys. You know, there were guys who were Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley, and there were guys who were Johnny Musso and Terry Davis. Although running the wishbone really doesn't work very well in backyard football. I got to tell you.
You know, Jeff, there's that phrase, never meet your heroes, right? Did you get a chance? I assume you got to know Joe Namath and the other people that you really looked up to growing up. What was those experiences like for you? So many people are disappointed, and I've met Ken, and we've become friends, and it's been wonderful. It's been one of the best relationships of my life, frankly.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. I've never met Joe, never had the privilege to meet Joe Namath. Have always wanted to, but never really had that opportunity. No, wait a minute. That's not true. I was exiting the men's room, the men's restroom at Bryant-Denny Stadium. He was coming in, and we said hello to each other. So I guess technically we did meet, but we haven't really met and spoken to each other a great length of time. But he's just the coolest of cool. I mean, he always has been. I mean, it's just amazing just how incredibly cool he still is after all these years, and how he just resonates coolness to many generations, you know, of football fans. Pat Sullivan has always been one of my favorite all-time people. I thought Pat Sullivan was just an incredibly awesome guy, and, you know, loved him from the first time I met him. His wife Jean, loved those two, and really, really, really miss him.
So do I. You know, it is pretty cool, Jeff and Lars, when we get into this business and we have a chance to actually meet our heroes. But that's a really, really cool thing, and I can relate, because I remember when I met Henry Aaron, I just and I never did this. I never asked for autographs. I asked for his. I never thought it was the place to ask for somebody's autograph when it was a part of what you were doing that day and a part of your assignment. Then I told him afterwards, I said, your picture, your poster was on my bedroom wall since I was 7 years old. And he looked at me, and you could tell it really meant something to him. And I don't know, the saying about not meeting your heroes that didn't hold up with me. It didn't hold up with you. Who else did you meet, Jeff, that you really, really, really went, wow, this is cool?
Well, I did a story for one of the pregame specials that we did before one of these playoff games. It was actually before the Alabama USC season opener, and I did a long piece about, you know, when Alabama unveiled the wishbone. And so I got to interview Terry Davis, you know, that one of my heroes, John Hanna. Got to interview him. That was amazing. I interviewed him at his farm. And Wilbur Jackson. It was just it was just the most. And Mike Washington. It was like, well, actually, I interviewed Mike Washington for an Alabama Notre Dame piece. When I also interviewed Gary Rutledge, you know, the guys who played in that heartbreaking loss to Notre Dame in 73. You know, yeah, Gary Rutledge, Steve Sprayberry, you know, just, you know, David McMacken, and just, and that was just fun because that was the era that I grew up in. And, you know, I remember when, I don't know, I just vividly remember, you know, just all the big plays and all that stuff. So just to meet these guys in person was just enormously fun. I just can't tell you how much fun it was.
You know, kind of hide your giddiness, you know.
It was just
you don't want to turn into an 8-year-old, but then again, I mean, you're talking to Joe Namath, for goodness sakes. John Hanna.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was 8, I went to a football camp at the University of Nebraska, and my personal coach was John Hanna. And I could not believe how big this man was. And also, he was just so great working with the kids. And Jeff, what was it like for you interacting with John Hanna? And, you know, memorably, SI, Sports Illustrated, put him on the cover as saying, I think, what was the headline? It was like the NFL's
greatest
lineman ever. Yeah.
Well, it didn't start off very well. We were supposed to meet him at his farm, and he had a lot of chores to do. And we were supposed to meet him, and I'm just going to make up a random time here. We were supposed to meet him, let's say, like at 10:30 a.m. And we're folks who, you know, my dad always taught me, you know, if you're early, you're on time, you know? And so, and, you know, if you're on time, you're late. If you're late, you're selfish, all that. And so we get there like at 10, we're going to get there at 10:15. So I call John, and I go, hey, John, this is Jeff. We're going to be there just a little early. And he goes, didn't we say 10:30? And I go, yeah, we said 10:30. This is like a mammoth of a man. And the fact that I made him just a little bit ornery over the phone intimidated the heck out of me. So we kind of drive around the farm a little bit. So we show up at exactly 10:30, and he's out there waiting on us. And I'm telling you, he couldn't have been any nicer. He was all dirty and, you know, and just sweaty because he'd been working. Didn't bother him at all. He didn't say, hey, let me go in and get cleaned up. And we interviewed John Hanna fresh off his chores at the farm, and he couldn't have been any nicer. He was fantastic.
You know, he had one or two brothers that played. They were pretty good ball players, too. We'll check into that over the break as you listen to... Hey, that's Jeff Spiegel, by the way. Jeff Spiegel from ABC 3340. Remind me to ask you about what you're going to be doing this weekend as far as your coverage and all that. We'll get to that on the other side of the break. As you're listening to Big Noon Sports, this segment is being brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker, Advantage of Realty Group.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Hey, this is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around, and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world-class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m. The Martin Houston Show.
Join us tomorrow morning as we continue to break down recruiting with Max Recruiting at Max_recruiting as Alabama seeks to pull in yet another great recruiting class. It's the Martin Houston Show. The sound of Alabama sports, your show, your team.
Catch the Martin Houston Show from 6 to 7 weekday mornings on Tide 100.9.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Blistering heat continues for the rest of the week. A sunny sky this afternoon. The high today near 100. For tonight, clear with a low at 78. And tomorrow and Friday, lots of sunshine both days. Highs will stay close to 100 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 96 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Lars Anderson, Matt Colton, Justin Jones is at the helm, and our guest is ABC 3340's Jeff Spiegel. David and Charlie, Hannah, they both played at Alabama. Charlie played 8, 10 something like years in the NFL, mostly with the Raiders, won a Super Bowl. But all those Hannah Farm guys up there on Sand Mountain were big old farm. They could actually carry a tractor.
Oh, man. Albertville, Alabama. Yes, sir.
Hey,
let me name three more guys if I can. And Ricky Davis was the other guy that we talked to about that Alabama Notre Dame piece. But also John Coyle, incredible guy. One of those guys that he spoke at my brother's high school graduation in 1974. And then to finally get the opportunity to meet him, and I've certainly had a lot of admiration for him as a player as well. But just all he's done with the Big Oak Boys Ranch is just, you know, just phenomenal. And then I did a look back at like 25 years later, the Pump Bama Punt. Bill Newton and David Langer got to interview those two guys, and they were really cool as well. So it's been, part of the really cool things about doing this for as long as I have is that I got a lot of great memories when it comes to stuff like that.
Did Langer try and hit you during the interview?
He tried to sell me a gun
I've ever seen on a football field.
He tried to sell me a car. He worked at a car place, I think, in Tuscaloosa. I can't remember which one, but he was good. He was great, though. He and Bill both.
I always thought it was funny. He ended up selling cars in Tuscaloosa, of all places.
Yeah, exactly.
Excuse me, Lars, go ahead.
Jeff, right now the phrase salty Tua is trending on Twitter. And this goes back to Ryan Clark, who is a former NFL player, now an NFL analyst on ESPN. And he saw Tua. It didn't talk to him, but he saw him and he said, quote, "He wasn't in the gym, I'll bet you that. He might have spent a lot of time at the tattoo parlor, but he wasn't at the dinner table eating with a nutritionist." And Tua, I've never heard Tua come after anyone before, because he's about the most respectful person I've ever met. And he just said in a press conference about 40 minutes ago, he said, "It's a little weird what he said. I come from a Samoan family. Respect is everything. We are tough-minded people, but if we need to get scrappy, we can get scrappy. I would appreciate it if you kept my name out of your mouth." And what we're seeing is that Tua, he's gained weight. I mean, he's put on muscle. He's noticeably bigger now than he was, and I think that is a reflection of him trying to do everything he can to avoid the injuries that he has sustained at the beginning of his NFL career. And we've even seen when he has taken some hits that he's sort of learning to roll into the ground rather than just kind of go straight back. But have you ever seen this side of Tua before?
No, I never have. I never have. And that's, good for him. Good for him to kind of just, defend himself and do that. And he, one of the knocks, against Tua when he was at Alabama, and, Saban said this, on Tom several times that, you know, there's nothing wrong with throwing the ball away. You know, and he tried to extend plays. That was one of his gifts, was extending plays. But it also, you know, was his downfall. It also led to, you know, him getting hurt. And so, you know, I'm glad that he's taking all this to heart, putting on some muscle, and, you know, because the Dolphins need him to stay on the field. I mean, he's their ticket to whatever postseason plans, you know, they ever have again. And he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to be in there. But listen, don't ever attack this guy's work ethic. I mean, yeah. This guy's got a work ethic that is, you know, second to none. And, you know, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, and I think people are so focused on the injury that you forget how good he was last year when he played. I mean, he was as accurate as any quarterback in the league. And again, if he can learn how to, you know, avoid those hits, and some of them were kind of freak hits, you know, but I think the Dolphins are potentially a sleeper, you know, sleeper pick to win the AFC Championship and get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we saw this at Alabama, how accurate he was, you know, throwing the football. And we talked about this in the office, you know, not too long ago about, you know, top Alabama quarterbacks, you know, in the Saban era. And he's got to be way up there. He's got to be way up there. And he just changed the position, you know, when they signed him. Forever, I mean, at Alabama, I think. Because it used to be, you know, that Alabama didn't get the five-star, you know, quarterbacks. You know, but he's, you know, just terrific, terrific human being. To see him get attacked like that, you know, good for him that he stood up for himself and gave it back to the guy.
And, Jeff, did you notice anything, any takeaways from Bryce Young in his first two preseason games?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think sometimes, you know, we can make too big a deal out of the preseason. I know this. The offensive line is just going to have to protect him better. I mean, yeah. If they can protect him, I mean, he can do some magical things back there in the pocket. And he can do some magical things if the protection is not, you know, like 100% great. But the protection is far from 100% great. So the offensive line has got to get shored up. But if they get that situation squared away, I mean, this guy's going to do some incredible things in the league.
Jeff, it's like we were eating lunch and we said, hey, come over here and sit down. And we just picked up a conversation. Here it is 30 minutes later. This has been awesome. Hey, I know that you invest a lot of time and effort into your coverage in the weekends with college and high school football. You want to go over that and what you're going to be doing? Because high school football tees it up tomorrow night, now two nights from Friday on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thursday night. Yeah, Vestavia Hills, Mountain Brook is a game we're going to be watching pretty closely. A couple of, Vestavia Hills with Robert Evans, you know, is really going to start coming on, you know, as a program and challenging, you know, the Hoovers and the Thompsons. And then Chris Yeager does an incredible job in Mountain Brook. Friday, Thompson plays Opelika down at Crampton Bowl, you know, so we'll be all over that one. And all of the other, you know, many of the other openers that are going to be happening on Friday. And then, you know, Saturday, Jacksonville State kicks off first FBS season in school history. They'll be playing UTEP and a Conference USA game right out of the gate. So that'll be kicking off Saturday at 4:30. We'll be there for that one. Then, of course, the next weekend, you know, you got Bama, Auburn, and the Thursday before you got UAB and Samford. There's just a ton of good football going on, you know, right now just in this area. And it's one of the really cool things about this job.
Indeed. And talking to you is one of the cool things about this job, too. Jeff, thanks so much for your time. It just blew away.
Yeah, sorry, Jeff, I'm sorry about the Ken Anderson rant. I didn't mean to take up the time here. I literally just found it out in real time. So.
Oh, man, I hate it. I hate it.
Speaks, I still don't know if we've got him back.
I hope he eventually gets in. It's a crime that he's not in.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, yep. As Lars said, this was the year. Hey, let's go to the top of the hour. Jeff, have a great day. Great sportscast. Appreciate your time as always. That's Jeff Spiegel from ABC 33.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right, it is halftime. We got to take a water break. We'll be right back on Big Noon Sports.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Gary Harris coming up Thursday on the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM. The coach, Ellis Johnson, is back for his second visit as he breaks down the SEC East as we get ready for the season. Also, Jeff Spiegel and more.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com. WTUG HD2 Northport and W265 CG Tuscaloosa. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. A Town Square Media Station.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Second hour brought to you by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage, Matt Coulter, Justin Jones, and Lars Anderson. Trying to cruise through this steamy Wednesday afternoon. Ken Anderson did not make the Canton Hall of Fame, and we've pretty much lost Lars since 12:30 when that announcement was made. Are you any better there, buddy?
No, I'm not. I actually am just looking at a list now of the biggest snubs in Hall of Fame history.
So, here we go. All right, give me five. Give me five.
Okay, Andre Johnson. Wide receiver for the Texans, and he was not selected during his first 2 years of eligibility. Seven-time All-Pro, led the league in receptions and receiving yards multiple occasions. Reggie Wayne, another terrific wide receiver. Dwight Freeney, Roger Craig, who we mentioned, he was one of the top 12 finalists. Lester Hayes. How is Lester Hayes not in the Hall of Fame?
Wasn't he the guy that had the yellow stuff all over his body?
Yep. Clay Matthews, four-time Pro Bowler, played 19 NFL seasons, 16 of them with
the
Browns.
He's not in the Hall of Fame?
Clay Matthews, linebacker, not in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, listen.
Heinz Ward? Do you think he should be? He's not in the Hall.
I don't know. He was just such an exceptional player in so many different positions. But somebody call Christian Miller and tell him that Clay Matthews is not in the Hall of Fame, and he'll get that straightened out. Remember, that's like his favorite all-time player, I think.
Yeah, that's right. LC Green.
All right, now I'm mad. All
okay. LC Greenwood. Remember LC Greenwood? He's a key defense. Member of the Steel Curtain defense for Pittsburgh, six-time Pro Bowler. I mean, he would just put fear in quarterbacks, right? Because he was so good.
Aren't like eight or nine of the players on the Steel Curtain in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Just on the defensive side of the football?
What about Jim Marshall? Not in the Hall of Fame. Like he, to me.
The Purple People Eaters?
The Purple People. Yeah, he was like the key member of the Purple People Eaters of the Vikings. And he holds the NFL record for most seasons played by a defensive player at 20. And that's tied with Daryl Green and Junior Seau. He holds a record for most consecutive games by a defensive player at 282. Most consecutive starts by a defensive player, 270. Most fumble recovers, 30. Remember, he's well known for
going the wrong way.
Going the wrong way. He picked up a fumble. He got a little turned around, and he ran the wrong way. And I think he spiked the ball.
Yeah, he got into the end zone
and spiked the ball, and so it ended up being a safety.
I think they were playing maybe the Rams, and one of the Rams players came up to him right as he got in the end zone, just patted him on the shoulder pad and said, "Hey, thanks a lot there, Jim." can you name the other ones on the
Purple People Eaters? The Purple People Eaters? Yeah. Oh, man.
I think I can. Let's see.
You want
me to start?
Yeah, go
Alan
ahead.
Alan Page, who's now a judge.
Yeah.
Very distinguished man. Olson? No, that's I'm going to do Larson. Olson's with the Rams.
I was thinking like Larson. Ron Yeri?
He was a lineman.
Was he offensive Rams, lineman? Yeah.
So it was Page, Marshall, Larson, and don't tell me. I'll get it later in the show. Okay. Now that we've gone into our NFL players.
Carl Eller. Carl Eller.
And he may have been the best of all of them. They were all great. But that may be the biggest gaffoo in the history of the National Football League.
Yeah.
That, and what did Leon Lett do? He did something in the Super Bowl or a playoff game.
Yeah. He did a couple things. One was the Super Bowl where Steve Tasker, who also you can make the argument he belongs in the Hall of Fame because special he's one of the team. greatest special team players in history. But Tasker, remember, he ran him down as Lett was celebrating about the 1 yard line and he knocked the ball out of his hand. And then he did this other thing where it was a blocked kick. I think it was on Thanksgiving. And it was a blocked field goal, and instead of just letting the ball go, he went toward it, slipped, kicked the ball, and then I think they're playing Miami, and a Miami player jumped on it for a touchdown. And I could be getting that slightly wrong.
Was that the details snow? There.
It was in the snow. Yeah. Yes.
You know, he's from somewhere in Alabama. Leon Lett is. Okay, we've pretty much gone all over the National Football League page. Did you see where? Okay, just bringing up stories as we go along. By the way, during the break, Lars, because we really are on a long and winding road here for this show, but I was just scrolling through some things and I saw a quote from Mike Leach about Pirates. Man, we're going to miss that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was making jokes about swords and peg legs and all this kind of stuff. What a delightful human being. All right, one of the big stories nationally is, and I think it's going to be announced here if it hasn't already sometime today, Reggie Bush is going to sue the NCAA for defamation of character. Now, do you just want me to read that headline and move along, or do you want to...
No, let's dig into this.
Oh, I don't... first of all, in just terms of time, I think about it like the Michael Oher thing. Why is this just now coming up? This is in 2010, is that right?
Yeah.
Maybe even earlier than that. Why is it just now coming to light that he thinks the NCAA defamed his character?
All right, so I think it goes back to a statement that was made in 2021. So the NCAA statement in question, it was, about the discussion was about, an inquiry about the possibility of Bush having his records and participation restored in light of the changes to the name, image, and likeness rules that went into effect, right around, that time. And I believe, I'm trying to find the actual statement that was made. Bush is, he's trying to have his 2005 Heisman Trophy reinstated. If you remember, it was forfeited, or he had to forfeit the trophy in 2010 after a four-year extra benefits investigation determined that he and family members, while he was a student athlete at USC, accepted cash, travel expenses, and a home in the San Diego area, rent-free for more than a year, and also they were given $10,000 to furnish it. And the NCAA put out a statement that his lawyer said was completely false and highly offensive. The NCAA knew Mr. Bush was never accused of, involved in, much less sanctioned any pay-for-play arrangement. So, I'm trying to find the actual statement that he is saying that the NCAA maliciously attacked his character through a false and highly offensive statement that was widely reported in the media and substantially and irreparably damaged his reputation. And that came from the law firm and the defamation suit. The NCAA statement in question was issued to ESPN on July 28th, 2021, in response to, again, Bush having his records restored. And the statement was, and this is a well-thought-out statement because it was a written statement, said, although college athletes can now receive benefits from NIL, NCAA rules still do not permit pay-for-play arrangements. So they are suggesting that that Reggie Bush did that there was a pay-for-play. But this is going to be tough. I mean, when you are suing, when a public figure is suing for defamation, the standard, as you know, you and I have both been through this kind of stuff. The standard is really high, right? For you have to prove a reckless disregard for the truth. And the fact that this was written out, now, rather than just somebody saying something off the cuff, that may change things, don't you think?
A little bit, but I think part of their argument is that because you can get NIL now, then why take his Heisman Trophy away when it's that's available today, but it wasn't in 2005.
And I think that's really what this is all about. Like, just give him the Heisman back, and this will all go away. And I think we should give him the Heisman back.
I'd have to give that a little bit of thought, but I think my initial reaction is yes, and then let's go straighten out NIL, and let's snap it on Saturday. That's what I say. Let's snap it. Coming up, Mark Keim from WNSP and Mobile and AL.com. Good story on ticket sales when we get back.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Blistering heat continues for the rest of the week. A sunny sky this afternoon. The high today near 100. For tonight, clear with the low at 78. And tomorrow and Friday, lots of sunshine both days. Highs will stay close to 100 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 97 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Interviews about pertaining to University of Alabama football and all are being sponsored by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. And joining us now from Mobile is Mark Keim from AL.com and WNSP, FM Sports Radio down in the Mobile area. Just quickly, first of all, how are you and what's the weather like there?
You know, it's funny you mentioned weather, guys. By the way, living the dream. We're that much closer to toe hitting leather, so I'm good. I was listening to Span. Nobody does it better. But at this point, isn't it a little just counterproductive to even get the weather? I mean, you need the weather just kind of open a window, right? I mean, we're under this heat dome, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuts. So people are melting. But other than that, we're good, man.
Yeah. Good. Hey. I love articles like this that just give you a little bit of information that you probably didn't know about leading into the season. But you got a story on Alabama being the most in-demand football team as far as ticket sales are concerned. And you go on to list several different things and certain games and all that. I'm just curious, how do you gather the information? Does it come? I saw a story Forbes did, but then you've got StubHub, Vivid Seats, and SeatGeek. How did you put this thing together? I'm just curious.
Well, those companies are PR machines, so they push a lot of that information out to media sites. So StubHub did this did this, I guess, in-house kind of analytic deal, and they do it every year. So Ohio State kind of led the country last year. Alabama, they're basically going, as you guys know, StubHub is one of those third-party vendor sites. So you put your stuff up there if you're not going to the game, and, of course, people are coming there hoping to get a good deal and get tickets from you. And so just the activity that the action that Alabama tickets are seeing, and there's some high profile games. Obviously Texas is the first one on the docket as far as high profile. So I just think there's a lot of questions surrounding Alabama. I think there's that whole disappointing year kind of cloud hovering over Tuscaloosa. I think there's a lot of interest to see how, you know, Nick Saban's going to react without Bryce Young, without Will Anderson, and having to plug in a very specific very prominent roles in that football team. So I just think there's a lot more interest.
Mark, you write about so many different subjects at AL.com, and frankly, I think you have the coolest job at AL.com. do you get a pick what you write about, or are you speaking with your editor? Like right now on the site, you have a piece on Chris Fowler to a multi-year deal, Sage Steele visiting Alabama, the ticket story that Matt just referenced, yeah. And also NASCAR legend announces a cancer battle as fans react. Like, how do you come up with these?
Oh, well, for all your listeners, while you're spouting awesome, I just posted Tim Tebow's biggest regret in college. So if you're interested to know what that one is, I'll give you a hint. He cried because of it. So you can go to AL.com and read that.
We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, so... It's a great question, because I don't necessarily talk to an editor. I'm what you would deem a buzz reporter. So I'm looking for anything that's trending, anything that I think people are going to read, right? So this is hard for some like old time newspaper folks to kind of wrap their head around. But in this day of analytics, we don't tell readers what they want to read. The readers tell us. And so there's a certain level of obligation and responsibility a journalist has as far as going out and covering certain things that the public has to know, obviously. I'm not sure it's that strict or defined in sports. So basically, I'm out there looking for everything that's trending or buzzing or whatever. So, yeah, I'm looking for all the interesting, cool stuff.
And it's been cool to me to go into the AL.com offices, or I don't even know if they exist anymore, but in Birmingham, but like to see like in real time how the stories are performing. And I'm guessing the pieces that you do perform very well in terms of the amount of eyeballs that they attract.
I'm going to go into coach speak here. I can't confirm or deny any speculation.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked that question.
No. I'm having a little fun. Let's just say if they didn't perform well, I wouldn't be doing it. There's a reason I write about, like, some people on staff kind of roll their eyes if I say I got a Lane Kiffin post coming. Well, I don't have an infatuation with Lane, but clearly people do, right? When, Bubba Wallace was in the news during NASCAR. I mean, I wrote a lot about NASCAR. Like, so it really just kind of depends. So I'll go wherever the story is. And that's why I tell people on my radio show all the time, long term, like, and you guys know this because you're in the radio business, you know, Alabama wins, they go undefeated, they go to the national championship. Long term, that's great. It's great for affiliates. It's great for advertising. All that's great. Give me a coordinator fired in the middle of the season, and you've given me a whole lot of meat on a bone to chew on for a few days of content. You know what I mean? So give me anarchy, and that's kind of why I love college football so much.
Mark, you're just reflecting our whole damn society. That's just what I'm going to bring. Okay? You are the mirror that we look into.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, though, because it works. I mean, I probably click more of your articles right off the bat based on a headline and some of the subject matter than I do any others. And that's why Lars said just a while ago, you have a great job. We're both envious. So anyway, speaking of the job, let's get down home. what you've heard in reports over the weekend, we're 3 days removed from the last scrimmage at Alabama. Anything new that's click worthy?
No. The things that caught my attention, specifically about what Nick Saban said, was he really kind of harped on the leadership thing again. But what was different this time, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the words right in front of me, but he said, don't stand up and think you're a leader when you're really not doing the things you need to do to be a leader. So I almost get the sense that there are guys trying to fill that void that he is so desperately looking for, but kind of failing miserably. Like, you always had that guy on your team that would be like, come on, guys, you're like that rah-rah guy, but he'd go out on the court or on the football field and turn it over three times. But he'd be on the one and be like, come on, guys, you got to do better, yet he's the problem. That's kind of what I envision right now in Tuscaloosa. So I do think he's still trying to find a leader. And I think that ultimately we'll go back to quarterback and naming the quarterback. But, you know, he said the execution's getting better. And those are the things that you expect to hear as we get closer to game time. I also found it interesting, guys, that when he talked about the quarterback, he didn't say anything about any specific quarterback. He used the word all. All played, all took snaps, all got sacked, all made mistakes. So he's not giving anything on this whole quarterback thing.
Sticking with the quarterback situation in Tuscaloosa, you have your finger on the pulse of Alabama fans. You obviously have your radio show, and you talk to fans, interact with fans. Who do you think they want to be the sort of not just the quarterback to begin the season, but like the guy who emerges as number one? Like who do you, if we were to hold a vote in this state, who do you think would win?
It's a great question. I think Simpson, and the reason I say that is because this coming off the Bryce Young years, I think this fan base is just so used to and expecting a guy to go out there and not only fling it all over the field, but make plays with his feet. And from what I understand, Simpson's a lot. I mean, we don't talk about him being athletic when you're sitting there talking about Milroe, because he's such a dynamic player. So I think part of me feels like the answer would be Simpson, because he's probably your best bet at giving you that dual threat. With that said, I think people are going to fall in love with Milroe if he gets in there and you see him take off. I think it's going to have that Jalen Hurts appeal to people. I mean, like, how do you keep a guy that athletic off the field? So I guess if you put a gun to my head, I'll say Simpson first, but it's tight. I think there's going to be a lot of love for Milroe.
If you were to just kind of try to, you know, narrow it down to just a couple of things, is there going to be an obvious difference in Alabama's offense this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, if we take Nick Saban at his word, I think it's just going to be more balanced. I think they're going to make more of a deal out of running the ball, getting back to what he used to do before he kind of implemented a spread and tempo. He has said that they relied too much on Bryce last year. And I think when you go back and look at that LSU and that Tennessee game, both losses, he would have liked to sustain some drives and move the sticks a little bit and not put it in the air as often as they did. And again, I think we would all agree, it's hard to question putting it in Bryce Young's hands. But I think it's been proven over the years that if you're gonna win the big games, you're going to have to be able to do both and do it effectively. And I just don't think they ran it enough to be able to run it when they really had to. They've got to get that mental toughness back. Maybe they'll hit that mat that they did in Gainesville a few years back with Urban Meyer. But yeah, to answer your long-winded question, or long-winded answer to a short question, I think you're going to see a significant difference.
And going back to the piece you wrote on Sage Steele coming to visit Tuscaloosa and be a guest speaker to the Alabama Crimson Tide team, I'd love just to get your personal opinion. Like, Sage Steele, as we all know, has been involved in a lot of controversy with ESPN, and you know, I think what she has said about Barbara Walters, the late Barbara Walters, is really been unseemly. Do you think it's appropriate? I mean, Coach Saban, and also, you know, Matt and I were talking about, you know, Pete Rose. Like, should Pete Rose be, you know, invited and, you know, Nick Saban sends his private jet to pick him up? Should he be talking to the football players? I'd love just to get your personal opinion, and you do a really good job of keeping your opinion out of this piece in particular, where you're just kind of reporting the facts. But I'd love to know if you thought it was a good idea, a bad idea. Your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea as long as it's presented in the right context. If you're trying to educate and teach from your own experiences and understanding the complexities of any certain situation, I think it can be a plus. Like for Pete Rose, I mean, we don't know exactly what was said. I mean, you know, I think Nick Saban was asked about the sexual assault and he kind of sidestepped that question. What are the pitfalls? What did he learn? How did it impact his life? What are the cues that you need to pick up on that he didn't, whether it's about sexual assault or whether it's about gambling? There's a lot of temptation out there in either or, I guess. I don't know. But I think if you use it as a teaching moment, I think there's no better person to learn from than a person that went through it themselves. So I like the fact that he brings in a lot of different types of people to talk about different experiences. And I guess in everybody's message is going to be different. I think, you know, to have somebody like, I don't know, Kobe came in, Ken Griffey just came in, to sit there and talk about the sacrifices you need to win at a high level probably starts getting to be an old message. So I think what Nick Saban does in that situation is he's trying to instill in his young boys the qualities and characteristics that are required to become good young men. And sometimes you got to hear some harsh truth and learn from those mistakes. So, yeah, I'm for it. I think as many voices as you can get, the better.
Hey, can you hang through the break? You know the drill.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Our guest is Mark Heim from AL.com and WNSP in Mobile. And he and all of us will be back in just a minute.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Thursday on Inside the Locker Room, 7:30, J.C. Sherberth will join us and go through the SEC. Also at 8:15, Tim Brando will be on Inside the Locker Room.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at laura.lee@thebamabroker.com. That's laura.lee@thebamabroker.com.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Interviews are presented and sponsored by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker, Advantage Realty Group. Earlier in the show, by the way, our guest from AL.com and WNSP Mobile is Mark Heim. earlier, it's just like it, just a wave is just kind of flashed in front of me. I just suddenly started thinking about Mike Leach. He is going to be so missed. Do you have a story? Have you been around him? Everybody seems to have a Mike Leach pirate story or something of the like. Do you?
You know, I hate to disappoint. I have not. I do not have a Mike Leach story, but I'll tell you, it's what makes the SEC, he is in part what makes the SEC so great, because it's not just about football, it's about personality. And when you get guys like him and Steve Spurrier, or, you know, Lane Kiffin, or go down the, I mean, Nick Saban, for, I mean, it's really the personalities that I think make this conference what it is. And there was no bigger personality than Mike Leach.
Okay, I got to ask you about the Tim Tebow story that you just filed and is posted.
Okay, I got to look it up. Hang on, I'm behind the AM.
Yeah. So I kind of thought that there was some revisionist history in Tim Tebow's response. I watched, I suffered through that whole Netflix Untold Swamp Things. Yeah. And I talked about it earlier. I thought it was terrible. I just thought it was terrible. It was just one big promotional thing for Florida football, and there was like absolutely no journalistic integrity at all in it, but that's just my humble opinion. But yeah, I don't know if you got a chance to see it. So
I did.
Okay, so I'd love to hear your analysis of it, and it's totally fine if it's different than mine. And two, just tell us about the story that you have just posted on AL.com.
Well, I think two things that came to mind that I kind of surmised after I watched it. In fact, I came up with one of them right after, I think, the first episode, which is the biggest problem with this is that you just can't cheer or root for Urban Meyer. There's no redeeming quality there. So it's hard to, it's just, I don't know if that's because we're SEC fans in the state of Alabama. Maybe Ohio State fans feel the same way. Maybe LSU fans. I don't know. It's just, you wanted to root for some of the other guys. There was, I mean, you clearly, everybody's a fan of Tim Tebow. But Brandon Seiler, I thought was great. Brandon Spike, those guys were great. Like, I was cheering for them during the course of the documentary. I was waiting, wanting to see Urban Meyer fail. That was the biggest thing I took from it. The second thing is, and this is kind of for all you Nick Saban fans out there, it really goes, he's such a contrarian to what Nick Saban preaches, right? The process, one step at a time, get the play right, perfection over and over and over, and the results will come. Well, Meyer appeared, according to this thing, was just the opposite. Like, all he cared about was the championship, and it essentially drove him mad. Like, he was sick. He was sick over it because he didn't worry about the day-to-day from time to time. He was just always talking about getting that championship and beating Spurrier and whatever the next step was. And he was just more of a big picture guy. And then I thought it was a little hypocritical, Lars, to your point. He's talking about how he'll never cut a kid loose, you know, because look what happened to the Avery kid, and he wound up dead a year later over an OD. Yet they do this whole thing about how he kicked guys off the team if they couldn't physically keep up in these grueling workouts. So why not call a spade and say, you know, I'm going to keep you if you're good enough, and whatever you do off the field is not an issue. And if you're not good enough, I'm gonna get rid of you. It was just really hypocritical. I'm not a fan of. I'm probably less of a fan of Urban Meyer now than I was before that thing debuted. And he didn't set the bar real high before that thing debuted.
And in that crying game that Tebow, you know, says his biggest regret.
Yeah.
He said, and you quote him in your story. He said, "They," meaning Alabama, "had the edge because they had nothing to lose. And we had everything to lose." Well, hold on. Pause it right there. Alabama's 12-0. Alabama right. was ranked second in the country. Alabama had everything to lose. I mean, this revisionist history is just, you know, I've said this so many times, it makes me blue in the face, but we are in a post-fact age where facts don't really matter anymore. And I don't know, maybe Tim Tebow is just not recalling things correctly.
We live in 1984.
Yeah. Yes, so, exactly.
So speaking of revisionist history, maybe you guys can help me out with the revisionist history, though, because they were also talking about Urban Meyer's recruitment of Tim Tebow and how he wasn't even on the radar. You know who he was, blah, 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 blah. But then he had to go, like, all in, and, like, it was coming down the wire. In the documentary, he was talking about how Alabama was kind of the leader. But from what I remember, and, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be, I always got the impression people were always saying Shula had no shot at Tebow. He was a Gator through and through. He had the whole Florida Gator mailbox, and he was just wasting his time. There was no way. I don't really remember, and I'll have to go back and look. Do you guys ever remember seeing reports that indicated that Alabama and Mike Shula were the favorite to land Tim Tebow?
Well, as a matter of fact, didn't we talk about this yesterday, Lars?
Yeah, we did.
Shula, as I remember, at the time, his high school came to Hoover to play a nationally televised game.
I remember that, yeah.
It was a big deal, and Tebow was a big deal. Hoover ended up winning it by a couple of touchdowns, but Tebow put on a show. And at that time, I think the lean or the belief was that he was leaning towards going to Alabama. But in the end, he ended up going to Florida. Now, I think Lars kind of remembers it that way too, right?
Yeah, I wrote about it in The Storm and the Tide, I think. Or, I don't know, could have been Chasing the Bear, one of those books. But so Mike Shula had spent, like, the previous day in the Tebow household, and he was just he was very confident that that Tebow was going to come to Alabama, because as you Matt could talk to this better than probably both of us, that Mike Shula is a man of deep faith, and they really sort of connected on that level. Am I correct on that, Matt?
You are.
And so we just, Matt and I yesterday, we just kind of threw this out, and I'd love to hear your thoughts too. What if Tim Tebow comes to Alabama? Does that mean that Nick Saban never gets to Alabama? And does that mean, like, it changes a lot of people's lives, including probably all three of us?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think so. If Shula lands Tebow, there's no way Shula's gone. I'm one of the few that actually thought Shula did a pretty admirable job under the circumstances there. But yes, I don't think Nick Saban ever gets here. I don't think Urban Meyer in Florida ever gets back to that prominence that is so documented in that Netflix series. I think you follow that scenario under the what if Drew Brees got cleared by Miami doctors, right? When Saban was with the Dolphins, I think they're very similar. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Shula wound up bringing Alabama back to where everybody expected him to be. Probably not as quickly, but certainly with a guy like Tim Tebow at quarterback. Yeah, I mean, Saban's never at Tuscaloosa.
It's a really, really crazy thing to think about, but I think we all agree. Urban Meyer helped Alabama win 6 national championships. Is that what we're saying here?
I don't know. He's got a headache. He can't talk right now.
Mark, is there I always like to ask reporters this question. Is there a favorite athlete or coach that you have interviewed and kind of, maintained a relationship with over the years that, maybe you didn't expect that to happen when you first met?
Wow. We've had a number of high school players come through that have always kind of a couple guys stayed in touch over the years. The most recent one is Riley Leonard. He's the starting quarterback over at Duke. He's from Fairhope, which is in our backyard. Probably the best high school interview I've ever done. Jake Coker, I saw Jake just the other day. We have him on through high school. He's got a great story, by the way, about when he played basketball against the Marcus Cousins here in Mobile, and how he was a sophomore and got dunked on. Jake's great. We had him on just the other day, but he's a guy that I kind of still talk to. Antonio Coleman, for those that remember that name, over at Auburn, he's the head coach now at Williamson. He used to come on the show as a player, which tells you a couple things. These guys love the game, and I'm clearly getting old. But those are the guys that come to mind right off the top of my head. Barry Dunning Jr. Was Mr. Basketball in the state of Alabama 2 years running. He went to Arkansas. He's now at UAB. I'm sure you guys know. Have a great relationship with Barry. He's great. My son was his point guard for a year so in high school. So that was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. On the flip side. On the flip side, who was somebody that was, shall we say, challenging to deal with that surprised you?
You're not going to put him on the spot like
oh,
that.
Oh, come on.
So a guy, it like surprised me as him being difficult?
Yes.
How do I put this? Let's say, Jay Coker is good people. I can't say that about all quarterbacks that may or may not have played in the SEC that are from this state.
I think I know exactly who you're talking about.
I think I know who you're talking about, too.
You worded that without just totally rearing back and slugging somebody. Okay, final question. I asked Lars this yesterday. Who's a better college football quarterback, Tim Tebow or Stetson Bennett? Is it the fourth?
I would say Tim Tebow. I argued for years that Tim Tebow was the greatest college quarterback I ever saw until Cam Newton stepped on the field at Auburn. Tim Tebow had an ability to will his team to win. He was just that good. He was just that determined. I don't know if the skill level, clearly based on his NFL career, I'm not sure his skill level was where it needed to be, but he did just enough to inspire. And I just don't think you can look at that in a way, grade that in a way that's substantial, right? I mean, I don't know how you grade that. So from I would say Tim Tebow without hesitation over Stetson, but I would say if Cam Newton was the quarterback for multiple years, you would have seen multiple championships at some university. And that was a shame they didn't do anything on Cam Newton in that Florida doc at all. Travesty.
Mark, the clickbait Heim, joins us on Big Noon Sports. Hey, Mark, thanks. Have a great afternoon. And by the way, you can also hear him in the Mobile area. I'm sure you can dial him up and stream just like you do this show at WNSP.
Absolutely. Hey, enjoyed it, and I've been called worse, so try harder next time. Thanks, guys.
Mark, okay. Mark, seriously, you're one of our favorite guests. Thank you so much.
Oh, appreciate it, guys. Enjoy it.
He does do a great job. Speaking of clickbait, there was one that I just happened to see this morning scrolling through whatever site I was on that is the worst ever, and I would never click on it. I'll share that with you when we get back on Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Blistering heat continues for the rest of the week. A sunny sky this afternoon. The high today near 100. For tonight, clear with a low at 78. And tomorrow and Friday, lots of sunshine both days. Highs will stay close to 100 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 100 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Well, those of you listening in Tuscaloosa just heard James Spann, the weatherman. It is 100 degrees. Yay, we hit the century mark. Boo, we hit the century mark. I'm looking up to see what it feels like. It's 110, that's all. All right, Lars, Nebraska's looking okay right now, isn't it? hey, also, before James Spann, we heard Reagan from R&R talk about the Cigar Mansion and they're a sponsor of this show. Big shout out to them. Just real quick, the first time I went down there was the day of the Tennessee game. And Reagan said, come down here, pick out a stick, and let me pour you a little glass of bourbon. And that's exactly what happened. But I didn't really know. You don't know what to expect. You turn left onto 6th Street, and then there literally is, I'm assuming it's an antebellum home. It's probably 150, 160 years old. It's got the columns and all that. And it's what I would call an old Southern mansion. And it's got two floors, and you got leather, many leather-bound books. Sorry, that just popped into my head. But you remember that?
From Ron Burgundy. Yes.
Anyway.
I'm very important, yes.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah, anyway, that's the line. Yeah.
Great. And we smoked a cigar and had a small glass of bourbon. And it's a great place to go. I'm sure women like it, but it's you know, it's kind of a guy's place. Am I getting in trouble for saying that? But I've seen women in there, too. Women smoke cigars a lot more than you'd think. But anyway, I know you've been there. You like it. And I'll be down there a lot this fall as I'm going to help out with some of the Tide postgame stuff. So, all right. Now, here's the story. Justin, turn your mic on. Pull up a chair. I saw this morning. Are you inclined to click on this story if the headline is as follows? Megan Rapinoe sends clear message to Taylor Swift.
I am actually inclined to go outside maybe and turn off mine. I'm not a big Megan Rapinoe fan, not even close.
I would run like a scalded dog. Nothing about that interests me. Lars, are you a big Taylor Swift guy? Or?
No, I'm not. I think I should be, though. Like, her tour that she's on right now is generating just incredible buzz. And just every stop she goes to. I mean, Justin, you'll have to help me out with this, but wouldn't you say that she's the biggest celebrity in America right now?
Yeah, she definitely is. Her tour is, I think, the hardest. You know, we were talking about SEC football tickets, which are, like, the hardest to get. Taylor Swift has them all beat, I think, all over the country, especially selling out.
Is Kim in there chiming in? Does she know? Is she there? Will she read this story?
No, that's JD. He's okay. Agreeing. They're selling tickets like crazy.
And she's like the Beatles, and that's blasphemous.
Well, you almost feel bad for her. You know, I forget where she was. Was it in Memphis, maybe? This is all over social media, that she went just to a restaurant to try to, you know, have a dinner. And word got out, traveled over social media. And just for her to get out of that restaurant required a ton of not only personal security, but police officers. And as she's just trying to make her way from the door to the limo or whatever SUV that she was climbing into, I bet you we saw there was like 2,000-3,000 people there, and everybody's got their
thousands?
Phones. Wow. Yeah. I mean, Justin, did you see this?
Could you say that again, Lars? The Taylor Swift at the restaurant, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Did you see that on social media?
I think somebody saw her and texted or tweeted it out, and immediately that street was filled. I couldn't imagine. It's so hard to go places like that.
Yeah, and I mean, well, whenever I go out with Matt, there's always at least one or two people.
That's not true.
That is so true. You know it's true. It's totally true every single time. And you are very generous. And even if you don't recognize a person, you act like you do. You're really nice about it. And I've never seen you be rude. Yeah.
It's flattering. Yeah. Now, here's the one thing about that. If you are with your family, respect that, okay? If you're eating a meal and sitting at a table full of people, respect that. And I get the feeling people don't do that anymore. There were like thousands of people trying to just, what are they trying to do? Get a picture?
They're trying to get a picture.
Take a cell phone. What are you going to do with it? Put it over the fireplace? I don't get it.
I just think it makes life really hard, right? Because she cannot have a normal life. And I think just this celebrity, it can really, I've seen it with people that I've covered.
By the way, it's not like you don't get recognized too. They're a big fella.
Well, yeah, every once in a while, but not like you. You're the legend here in Alabama. I don't know. It changes you. And it probably, I'm guessing, makes it hard for her to have normal relationships and just do normal things. And you surrender so much. And I have spent time again with very, very famous people, and a few have lamented to me I don't know if I could do it all over again, even though I've had all this success. I don't know if I'd do it again.
There's nothing normal about their lives. Nothing at all. That's tough. But
that restaurant was in New Jersey, and it was just the scene was just absolutely crazy. And she was actually attending a wedding rehearsal dinner, but it was
saw her. Social media flash.
Yep.
Your privacy is no longer around. It's too bad. But man, is that girl wealthy? Whoo! Great headline I saw concerning Taylor Swift, which you had to be pretty darn old to remember and understand the significance of this. Said, I'm just waiting for Taylor Swift to say she's better than the Beatles. And that goes back to Tommy Charles and Doug Layton burning Beatles albums. There's one person listening to the show right now that knows what I'm talking about. Hey, tomorrow, one of our favorite players in Alabama, Marquise Mays, is going to be with us tomorrow on the show. Have a great day. Lars, you guys have a great day. Justin.
Buckner here for